Remember those television ads that you just couldn't escape during last year's election? The majority of them were paid for by outside spending. Now, here in Iowa, some lawmakers are calling for those independent groups to disclose their top donors. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. We'll talk reforming campaign finance with Senator Jeff Danielson and Megan Tooker, the director and legal counsel for the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board. In the second half, Doug Gross, the former chief of staff to Governor Terry Branstad, and Jeff Link, who oversaw successful campaigns for Congressman Bruce Braley. They'll tell us whether independent expenditures made a big difference in the last election. Join the conversation after this news. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Here in Iowa, it seems we're always talking about elections, and today we're discussing campaign finance reform here in the State House. For the first half, in the law library here at the Capitol, is Senator Jeff Danielson, a Democrat from Cedar Falls. He's the chair of the Senate's State Government Committee. He's introducing some legislation. Senator, thanks for being here.
It's good to be with you.
And also here in the law library is Megan Tooker, the director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board. Megan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And also on the phone, Bob House, vice president with Policy Works. He's consulted with many outside groups who want to make expenditures in campaigns like the Iowa Credit Union League, Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, and Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Bob, thanks for joining us on the phone.
Oh, thank you for the invitation.
And so we'll start with you, Senator Danielson. First of all, bring us up to speed on this legislation that you've introduced and what it aims to do.
Well, in Iowa, one of our major initiatives in the State Government Committee around campaign finance is 100% disclosure 100% of the time for all of the new entities that have popped up after Citizens United. And we believe that information and access to that information as an informed voter is very important. It fits the Jeffersonian ideal of an informed electorate, and there's no place in the country that that issue is more important than Iowa because we picked the president first. And I believe since we're first, we should also have the best campaign disclosure laws in the country.
Now you say 100% disclosure. What does that mean?
Yeah, so the basic concept is 100% disclosure 100% of the time, whether you're running for dog catcher all the way to president. If you're campaigning in Iowa, our voters have a right to know where the money's being raised and where it's being spent. So we have a multitude of legal entities now, super PACs, 401 C4s, C6s, and 527s. We believe all of them should be accessible to the public in terms of where the money's raised and where it's spent.
So this goes beyond just the top donors then for disclosing for these individual groups?
Right. Full disclosure. We have had some discussions about penny stock shareholders, if it's tied to a corporation under independent expenditures. Is it in the public's interest to know every one of the people that have an interest in it? But we want to at least get the major donors and the bulk of those citizens who are supporting those organizations.
Megan Tooker, director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, you've had some time to look over what these bills would do. Now, how have you analyzed them, and what are you finding?
Well, as Senator Danielson said, the ultimate goal for the Ethics Board is transparency. We're a disclosure board. We like disclosure. And we look at this from a fairness standpoint. If PACs and candidate committees have to report where their money's coming from, we think it's only fair that the groups doing independent expenditures have to do the same. So anything that increases transparency and allows Iowans to have a better sense of where the money's coming from that's fueling these expenditures, we're going to get behind.
So what would change under this bill? I mean, how would, you know, somebody flipping on their television the next election cycle, if this bill becomes law, would they see any difference?
Yes, they would. They would have quicker access to information than they have had in the past. And in some cases, they would have access to information that they don't now have. When you look at some of the organizations that are not required today to disclose their donors, Under our bill, the concept is simple, 100% transparency 100% of the time. So we believe if a voter is interested and they want the access to the information, they should be able to get it, and this bill would provide that for them.
So you're not just going to add more lines at the bottom of the television screen saying more donors. You have to, you know, go in and do your own research on them.
Yeah, I mean, we believe that an active citizen that participates and wants to gather their own information is a good thing. We're not interested in filling the screen with, you know, paragraphs of a small print. We do talk about basic disclosures when it comes to how you advertise, but honestly, that's no different than what a lot of us have to do today. So we're simply saying those new organizations that popped up after Citizens United, which under the law have the right to engage in direct advocacy and campaigns, just follow the same rules that we do for basic reporting. Who are your donors? Where are you spending your money? And do it in a timely fashion so that Iowans can inform their vote.
Megan, what is the current law, and do they not have to do any reporting right now?
Sure. Shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Citizens United, Iowa was the first state to amend its independent expenditure statute to allow corporations to make independent expenditures as required by the U.S. Supreme Court. And what the law does is require any group, not just corporations, but any group that's making an independent expenditure to file a report with our board, the Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, within 48 hours of making an independent expenditure. And that group is required to disclose some basic information, the cost of the expenditure, who it's supporting or opposing, what the medium is, whether it's newspaper, television, et cetera. And then where the big weakness of the law is that currently these groups don't have to disclose their donors unless the donors give for the purpose of furthering the expenditure. And let me back up. And the definition of an independent expenditure is an expenditure for communication that costs more than $750, that expressly advocates for or against a candidate, and is done without any coordination or prior approval from the candidate. So these are expenditures that are done separate and apart from the candidate's campaign. So what this bill would do is continue to require what we call earmarked contributions. So if an individual or entity gives money to the group making the independent expenditure for the purpose of that independent expenditure, that will continue to be disclosed. But then also, if a group is using non-earmarked funds, their general revenue, they'll be required to disclose their top donors.
And so that's where we're hearing when we talk about top donors. We're getting a lot more of that in this conversation now. And that's different. So what have other states done? I mean, is this similar to other movements around the state or around the country?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a lot of states that had to react to the Supreme Court decision of Citizens United, which, in my opinion, was one of the worst Supreme Court decisions ever. It basically said anything that was in the corporate treasury was available for political speech and opened a whole new market of political speech in the United States. And we're seeing 2 years on from that decision that people are taking advantage of that. It's the law today. There are some who want it repealed. We actually have a resolution in the Senate that calls for that. But while we're in the Citizens United era, there are also those of us who want full disclosure. And Megan talked about it a little bit. So, for example, if you're a C4 or C6 organization, you have a dual mission of education and political organizing. In the past, most of that activity was education, and it was not disclosed, and they didn't engage directly for or against a candidate because they could not. After Citizens United, they could. So we've seen a shift from primarily educational organizations into full-fledged campaign-type organizations, taking those two dual missions and basically flip-flopping them. In the process of that, they can keep all of their donors secret. We believe transparency is important. Not just for America, but for Iowa, because we have a special obligation in the caucus process to pick the president first. And what that really means on the ground then is that we have a lot of campaign consultants and a lot of interest in testing all of these newfound free speech tools and the multitude of advertising that Iowans are inundated with. And I believe it's our responsibility as decision makers to say that transparency is a good thing. And that's why the basic goal for me is 100% transparency 100% of the time, no matter how you're legally set up in Iowa.
You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. What do you think about this legislation and campaign financing in Iowa? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tell us on Facebook. Reach out to us on Twitter. We're at IPR Talk and at Clayton Masters. I also want to turn now to Bob House, who's on the phone. Bob, you're with PolicyWorks. Your group has worked with a lot of different groups like the Iowa Credit Union League, Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, and the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. How do these proposed changes impact these kinds of organizations and the decisions they would make?
Thanks for the question. You know, I think our advice to all of our clients and to anyone that's interested in getting involved in the political speech realm is very consistent. We play by the rules. You play by the rules either on the state or the federal level. And really, so the efforts taken by Megan and Senator Danielson really dictate those rules and what any group that is investing in this public discourse really have to do. So, you know, we currently play by the rules. I think any rule changes in the future, people will comply with and try and stay, you know, well inside the spirit and the letter of the law.
So would they be, these groups that you work with, would they be open to these kinds of changes? It's sounding like they'll just go with the flow is what you're saying.
Well, they comply with the law. So it's, you know, it is a very serious business to be in. I always start from the premise when advising these kind of clients that you are authorized, you are guaranteed the right for free speech. You should choose to exercise that if you want to. And if you choose to exercise your ability to stand up in the public square and state your opinion, then you need to be identified. So Senator Danielson was just referencing, there is a misunderstanding of Citizens United that's out there that corporations are wildly spending money right and left. They have a very, very specific set of criteria, I think, that they're going to look through when deciding whether or not to wade into the political arena. And that, let's use Coca-Cola for an example. They would be authorized to spend corporate dollars and on political discourse and on free speech. But they have to make a very serious calculation of who are they going to stand up for or against, and what will their customers ultimately want. I think you saw a lot of blowback a couple of years ago from Target's efforts up in Minnesota. They learned a very quick and brutal lesson that sometimes it doesn't make sense for a corporation to stand up and be counted because many of the customers may disagree with them. That's a real serious business calculation that they have to make. And I think it's put a lot of limitations on the amount of corporate money that's actually being spent on these elections.
Yes, Megan Tooker, you want to add something to that?
Yeah. Well, I would agree with what Bob had to say. Excuse me. First of all, I'm pleased to report that when I talk to people on the phone, they really are trying to do the right thing. They want to make sure what the rules are, and they want to play by the rules. I think Iowa, we have pretty clean elections. We don't have some of the problems that other states like Illinois have. So I would agree with, I'm confident that whatever the rules are, people will play by them. And Citizens United allows corporate entities to engage in political activity now in ways they weren't able to before. And I think a lot of people are concerned about the big bad corporations spending huge amounts of capital, and we're not seeing that. What we're seeing are these social welfare organizations, these 501c4s, are engaging in political activity, and some of them are even creating those entities for the specific purpose of hiding who they are. And that's where the real problem is. And you know, anything we can do to make those groups more transparent, we should. Just for your listeners, if they're not familiar with what a 501c4 is, that's a social welfare organization. So that might be some. We're currently in litigation with the Iowa Right to Life group. So that's an organization that promotes or is against legalized abortion. And so they spend a lot of time in that arena, and then they're also allowed to engage in political activity. For a C4, C5, or C6, while they can engage in political activity, it can't be their, quote, primary purpose. A C5 is a labor union, and a C6 is a business league. But what we're seeing is mostly C4s, groups that have advocated on specific issues that are now able to promote certain candidates or go after certain candidates that may be against their positions.
So how have the courts viewed the various states' legislation on the issue, and does that tell us how Iowa's law might be viewed, Senator Danielson?
Yeah, well, I think Iowans should be proud. Megan has already mentioned it. We were the first state in the country to pass a campaign disclosure law after Citizens United came out within just a few months. Governor Culver signed it. It was, at the time, a conservative approach to disclosure. We wanted to make sure that it would stand a test in the courts. And today we are now past two steps in the process. Megan mentioned that the Right to Life Committee challenged Iowa's law. It has been upheld twice at the lower levels and is now on track to be heard at the appellate level in federal court. We believe it'll stand up. It's also stood the court of public opinion. That is, Iowans favor disclosure and the access to information and the right to know it. Keep in mind, what we're discussing is disclosure. We're not discussing caps, limits, and outright repeal within the disclosure bill that's before the Senate. I have two other bills. One deals with repeal of Citizens United as a resolution, joining other states in a voice around the country to repeal that eventually, but also a public finance bill. The bill that we've really worked the most on is the disclosure bill, simply getting the information to the voters in a way that will still honor Citizens United, given the current legal framework. I just believe it's the basic building blocks of democracy, the access to information, the informed citizen ideal that Thomas Jefferson really talked about when he advocated for education in a broad sense in a democracy that can make decisions for itself.
So would this new bill withstand a court challenge, you think?
I'll be honest with you, we're pushing the curve a bit. And I was very conservative in our first bill 2 years ago because I knew we would be first, and I also knew that we would be tested. So I was very conservative in what Citizens United would allow us to do and what we were able to get passed. But after the last 2 years and seeing how some of these loopholes have been used to shield the information from the voter, I'm willing to say, let's go a little bit farther on the disclosure and see if that's tested. Now, Megan from the Ethics and Disclosure Board gave us a basic framework based on questions that she had been getting in her office about these issues because she's the compliance director for Iowa. And so we've taken some lessons learned. We've also seen some things occur that our voters aren't able to get access to information, and we put all of those things together over the last 2 years and put forth the disclosure bill, which is why I'm calling it 100% transparency 100% of the time. There may be some areas where people will test it, but I think that's good conversation for Iowans, and I think we'll learn something from all of the new things that have happened since Citizens United.
Is it going to get through the legislature, though?
I believe it'll be favorably looked at in the Senate. We've already passed it last year in the Senate, a very high vote, bipartisan as well, and I think that's something Iowans need to know. While I'm a Democrat, this is a bipartisan issue. I get feedback from constituents all across the political spectrum that money in politics is bothersome to them, and when they can't get information about it, even more so. So it passed the Senate last year. We'll probably make some changes based on what we've learned over the last year, but we hope to get it over to the House in time for them to look at it too.
Have you had any conversations with any Republicans in the House?
Yes, I've had conversations with the new chair of the State Government Committee, Guy Vanderlinden. That's usually where a bill like this goes. And most folks are open to transparency issues. So devil is in the details, right, always. but we think we'll get a favorable look at it, and people have kept an open mind, which is good.
And on the topic of transparency, we tried to get a Senate Republican or a House Republican to join us, and they declined. I also want to get to this other bill about public financing. Can you introduce this? Tell us a little bit about it, what it would do. We don't have a whole lot of time. But.
Yeah, in its simplest terms, it's a ability for a grassroots candidate to raise money in their own district and then be matched by the state of Iowa, so that we believe competition is good in campaigns. And if you believe that money has drowned out other candidates, given them less ability to actually start a campaign in the first place, one of the ideas that you've seen adopted in other states like Arizona and Maine, for example, is a public option for a campaign finance. And most concepts are basically a match once you raise a certain amount in your district. And that's what this bill would do.
Megan, has money become a bigger issue?
Well, I think money's always an issue. In Iowa, we don't have any campaign contribution limits, so we see individuals that are pouring tens and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars into candidates and PACs, treasuries. So it's an issue. I think we can't get money out of politics, but we can regulate it in a way that at least citizens can see where the influence is coming from. And I think that's what these bills are trying to do.
So what can you tell us about the picture from the last election?
Sure. Well, I have some numbers from the independent expenditure side from 2010 to 2012. We saw a large increase in independent expenditures in favor and against candidates, and then we saw a decrease on the judicial retention side. I think as we get through the retention votes on the justices that voted on the gay marriage case, we're probably going to see less and less spending on the retention side, unless there's another controversial case. But I think we're going to see, as groups and individuals become more comfortable and more knowledgeable about independent expenditures, we're going to continue to see an increase of those expenditures on the candidate side.
We've been talking campaign finance reform with Senator Jeff Danielson, a Democrat from Cedar Falls. He's introduced some legislation. Senator, thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure.
Also, Bob House with PolicyWorks, a group that's done consulting work for outside groups on various campaigns. Bob, thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Megan Tooker, the director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board. She'll stay with us for the second half. We'll also have Doug Gross, the former chief of staff to Governor Terry Branstad, and Jeff Link, who oversaw successful campaigns for Congressman Bruce Braley. From the Law Library at the State House, this is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. We're talking campaign finance reform today. There's a couple bills that have been introduced in the Iowa State House. We talked about them in the first part of the show. For the second half, we'll talk about how independent expenditures have changed the face of elections and campaigns. Megan Tooker, the director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, is sticking around for the second part of the show. Thanks for staying with us, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us also in the Law Library is Jeff Link. He's the president of Link Strategies. He's managed a few successful campaigns for Congressman Bruce Braley. And in 2008, Jeff served as media consultant to the Obama presidential campaign. Jeff, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us on phone is Doug Gross, the former chief of staff to Governor Branstad. He was co-chair of President George W. Bush's finance effort in Iowa and chairman of Governor Mitt Romney's 2008 presidential campaign. Doug, thanks for joining us on the line.
Good to be with you, Clay.
So, Megan, we'll start with you. What were the down-ticket races in Iowa that saw large independent expenditures this last election?
Well, from state races, we saw quite a few expenditures in the Gronstall-Ringenberg race, the mm-hmm. Bartz-Wilhelm race, the Reissetter-Danielson race, and the Breitbach-Beard race.
So there was a lot of attention was paid to on the presidential race and then maybe some of the third and fourth district here in Iowa. But there was quite a bit going on in these very much down-ticket races then, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board is only has jurisdiction over state candidates, and the Federal Election Commission has jurisdiction over federal candidates, so I can't speak to the 3rd and 4th District.
Sure. Jeff Link, we'll move to you now. What kind of races attract this kind of outside spending?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. It's any competitive race. That's where you're going to see a collection of outside money coming in. And you know, in the one example that Megan mentioned was the Gronstall race, probably wasn't that competitive, but the Senate overall was competitive. And there was, there was a move to try and pin Senator Gronstall down into his home district. I think that's why you saw a lot of outside spending on that front. But it really wasn't that competitive. That's probably the one outlier to that theory.
Doug Gross, what would you have to say to that?
Well, on the Gronstall race in particular, in addition to what Jeff said, I think you had movement folks that were involved in that. That became sort of the profile race for the gay marriage question in Iowa. Mike Gronstall took a very high profile role in preventing that from being voted on in the Senate. So those folks who wanted a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage in Iowa really targeted him and targeted that race. So you had a bunch of outside money that came into that race trying to knock Mike off.
So where did money make a difference? I mean, that was we bring up the Gronstall race and he's still sitting where he was before the election. Jeff Link?
Well, I think the one thing about a lot of this outside money is, and we saw this in the presidential race in particular, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars were spent on behalf of Mitt Romney and against Barack Obama, and it didn't really do anything. I think there is, the fact that campaigns cannot coordinate with these outside groups makes the money less effective. And so we haven't really seen it work. I mean, obviously in 2010, we had experience in the Braley campaign because an outside group came in and spent $2.5 million against Congressman Braley in the final 6 or 7 weeks of the election. And it certainly made it a much closer race than it was. We went from being up about 14 points to winning by just about two. But it didn't fundamentally change the outcome.
Doug Gross, have you seen money change any of the campaigns that you've followed or been a part of?
Well, I think to follow up on what Jeff said, I think Republicans made a real strategic error in this last campaign cycle by relying excessively on independent expenditures to the exclusion of the campaigns, the candidates' campaigns themselves, and the parties raising the money. So you had Karl Rove and American Crossroads, his group. You had a number of organizations that raised lots and lots of money. In fact, more money in some cases than what the party raised. Spent a lot of that money, and as Jeff indicated, to little effect in terms of the outcome. So, and a lot of that's because this cannot be coordinated with a campaign. And from a media standpoint, if you don't establish a consistent narrative and stick with it, the voter is not going to get it. It's not going to move the votes. And as a result of this, the Republican message, I think, was disjointed, largely because you had a cacophony of money coming in from many, many different places.
So you think money kind of clouded it up too much then?
I think it created static rather than a clear message.
You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. What do you think there needs to be done in the area of campaign finance reform? Is there too much money in elections? Do you want to know who's spending money on the ads you see on TV? Give us a call, 866-780-9000. 9100. Tell us on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. I'm on there as well, Clayton Masters. So I want to stay with this a little bit, what you were talking about, Doug. Can you give us some perspective about campaigns that you've seen over the years that before the big Citizens United push that were more successful, you think, because they didn't have that much money involved?
Well, the George W. Bush campaigns, both of which I was involved in both 2000 and 2004, the presidential side, did not have a lot of outside money spent in those races, and they had a lot of money raised and spent by the candidate, and as a result, the candidate was able to control and focus the message and control the campaign. And you compare that to the Mitt Romney campaign of 2012, where Romney was really sort of out of money right after he got the nomination, so he relied on these independent expenditures. Obama hit him hard and effectively with Jeff's partner, you know, sort of orchestrating the media. And the only response that Romney's folks had was this, the independent expenditures, which did a miserably poor job of defending him and defining him. So as a result, he was really never able to get off the mat as a result of that early June push by the Obama folks. So there are plenty of examples out there where the candidate controlling the money and spending the money is going to be far more effective than an independent expenditure doing so.
Jeff Link, what would you say to that?
No, I'd agree. And in fact, the 2008 Obama campaign, it was in that election that Obama said to outside groups that wanted to support him, don't do it. And it is largely because he wanted to be in control of his own message. And, you know, it goes right to what Doug was saying there. He did control his message in 2008. In 2012, there were some outside groups that spent on his behalf, but it was very small but in comparison to what Romney did.
These bills that have come up this session, have you reviewed them, and do you see them impacting any of the campaigns that you work on?
Yeah, I've looked at them. I haven't gone into all the details, but I just think this idea of creating, you know, the public financing or creating these spending floors or ceilings is—it's just really not. In, as a person who works in the business, year in and year out, it's just not practical. I mean, it's sort of like saying you're going to if you think you're going to keep money out of politics, it's like saying you're going to keep water out of your basement. It's going to come in, and you just have to channel it in some way. And I think the real reform that would make the most sense, understanding that people are going to spend on elections regardless of what the rules are, the thing that would make the most sense is just making sure that everyone knows and is informed who the donor is and how much they're giving. You know, we have this huge black hole in politics right now with 501c4 organizations. The donors' names are secret. The amount's secret. We don't learn till 2 years later what the amount is that they spent. And it's a disservice to voters. I mean, they need to have this information when they go into the polling place. If we had immediate disclosure, I think we would eliminate most of the problems in campaign finance. And I don't think we need limits. I don't think we need floors or ceilings. I think we just need immediate disclosure.
Doug Gross, what would you say to that?
I hate to say this as a Republican, but I totally agree with Jeff. what we need here, I mean, you cannot keep, as Jeff said, money is like water. It finds the crack. It always will. And regulating speech is a very dangerous thing to do in our society, particularly political speech. We don't want the government really to do that. And it frankly never works, always creates unintended consequences, tends to weaken our political party structure, which is not good for our system. So what we need is immediate disclosure. People just need to know who is spending what, and then they can make up their own minds. But I believe in the Citizens United case I support, because I think we ought to have freedom of speech and people ought to be able to spend their money the way they want to, so long as the voters have an idea where it's coming from, so they can't be fooled.
Yeah, Megan Tooker, you have something you'd like to add?
Yeah, along the same lines, I think if we had campaign contribution limits in Iowa, we would push more money into the independent expenditure arena, certainly. Right now, you can give unlimited amounts to candidates and parties. That's not popular with some people. The one nice thing about that is I think it reduces fraud, because there's no need to try to hide where the money's coming from.
Exactly.
You can write a check for $100,000 and it's reported. So we haven't seen the level of independent expenditures as we have on the federal side because of those unlimited contribution ability. But I think if we did have limits, we would see a much greater rise in the independent expenditure arena. And without more transparency, that's really really concerning, at least for the Ethics Board.
We have a caller, George. You're calling from Sherdan. George, what are we leaving out? What's your question or comment?
Well, yeah, I think you're leaving out the fact that these expenditures do affect elections by confusing the electorate. These expenditures set the terms of debate so that politicians are debating about things that are basically unimportant and irrelevant. And it also sets the debate on promoting this conservative point of view, which go along with the conservative majority of the Supreme Court, which is that, therefore, limited government. But they're really what they're saying is, therefore, unlimited corporate power to affect our whole economy and our whole society. And it's interesting to notice, if you look at the briefs that were filed on this important Supreme Court decision, there were corporations like John Deere who said they did not want this kind of ruling because they were going to be shook down by corrupt politicians that said, well, if you don't put money into our campaign or one of these super PACs, then we won't really consider the legislation you need. So it really boils down to corruption by this conservative point of view of limited government and unlimited corporate power.
Doug Gross, how would you respond to George's concerns?
Well, my point is that so what you find, I think the John Deere example he gives makes my point in that John Deere doesn't want to do this because they want to participate in these independent expenditures because it potentially impacts their customers or their customers' perceptions of them. And so long as we have disclosure of these activities, every corporation, every entity that's thinking about making an expenditure like this has to think about that because their primary purpose is not politics. Their primary purpose is to make a profit and stay in business. So disclosure creates accountability, truly the only effective accountability we'll ever have. And if we try to regulate this, as Megan indicated earlier, we'll either diminish the impact of the political parties, diminish the impact of the candidates, or prevent a robust debate about the issues. And I don't think any of those things are good for our society.
Dan in Albion writes, I don't have to disclose to anyone how I spend my money, whether it be for my debts, my fun, or charity. Why should I have to reveal publicly how I choose to spend my money politically? He says, that's my business only. Aren't you concerned that any plan to require disclosure is unconstitutional? I guess, Jeff, how would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, it's certainly passed constitutional muster, for 40 years. And I think the having an informed electorate sort of outweighs these concerns. And, you know, to Megan's point, and this is sort of counterintuitive, if we did remove the limitations on expenditure or on contributions for federal candidates, I think you'd see a lot of these independent groups go away. That there simply would be no need for all these independent groups. If candidates could take all the money into their own campaign committee, it would make them more accountable. Obviously, the disclosure is a huge part of that. And they would be in control of the message of their campaign. I mean, I think the biggest problem I have with Citizens United is that it creates a system where a candidate is not the loudest speaker on his or her own behalf in an election. You know, we saw that in the 3rd District race. I think Leonard Boswell was probably the Boswell for Congress campaign was probably the third or fourth loudest speaker in that election in terms of dollars. You know, he wasn't even close to being first or second.
Are you worried that removing the cap on contributions will drive up the cost of elections?
No, I mean, the cost of elections is driven primarily by the cost of television. So, I mean, that's probably the thing that they're tied to more than anything else. I don't think just because you change the rules, there's going to be a bunch of new money coming into the system.
Doug Gross, would you respond similarly to that?
Not only that, but we don't spend too much money on our elections. And I'm not saying this just for Jeff's benefit since he's in the business, but we don't because we spend far more marketing soap and toothpaste than we do electing a president. Think about an election as a huge marketplace. Marketplaces don't work without transparency. And that's why you need to have disclosure, so people can understand who is selling their message and whether or not they buy that message based upon who it's coming from and what they say. We need to have much more transparency in our elections, and if we take off some of these artificial limits, frankly, I don't think you'll see a rapid increase in expenditures anyway, because as Jeff says, a lot of the independent expenditures will go away.
Is there any way to effectively manage the cost of running for office, Doug?
Effectively manage it? Well, you have to, you know, when you're in the race, Clay, you got to spend the money that it takes to win. And as Jeff has indicated, in large part, it's driven by TV. And one of the things that's been happening, however, in the course of our campaigns, and Jeff can probably comment on this a lot more effectively than I can, but in the 2012 campaign, we saw the impact of door-to-door, the most basic form of campaigning that we've had since, you know, Abraham Lincoln's time. The door-to-door turnout effort engineered by the Obama campaign was probably more effective than all the TV advertising that Mitt Romney did. So I think one of the ways to control the effectiveness of the campaign is by the way citizens are reacting to the messaging that they're receiving. They're becoming increasingly oblivious to the expensive form, that being TV, and more persuaded by the shoe leather form, that means door-to-door knocking.
So, Jeff Link, the ground game was crucial. Does that have what it takes to make you not focus on the periphery of all the ads and the money funneling in? Or?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, if you think about what we went through in the last 14 or 15 months in Iowa, it was the greatest barrage of television advertising around a caucus and a presidential general election than we've ever seen. I mean, I've seen estimates that Romney and Obama spent over $60 million in Iowa. At some point, all those ads become white noise. And I think people did sort of tune out around Labor Day to television and then quickly to radio as well, just because there were so many ads and so many different messages. And it was almost refreshing to have somebody come to your door and talk to you about it, because you know you don't have 14 people coming to your door every night, but you watch 14 ads for politicians when you just try and get through the news. So I think the fact that it was different, it was almost like Back to the Future in the way that the campaign was really smart about which households they went to visit, which I think Doug was alluding to. And you know, they did have a lot of volunteers that wanted to help out in the campaign. So I think that person-to-person connection really, really did matter in the end.
So we've still got to look to the future. We've been talking a lot about the past. These bills that are coming up here in the State House, I'm hearing a lot of similar thoughts from both sides of the aisle here on the show today. Doug Gross, I'm curious, what kind of chance does this have at making it through into law?
None.
And why is that?
Well, because I don't think it won't make it through the House. They're opposed to public financing for campaigns. And I suspect leaders of the Senate at the end of the day will decide it's really not the direction they want to go anyway. It's more, so, I see, as a political statement than it is of a real chance of becoming law.
Jeff Lincoln.
I mean, here the one thing I noticed, I think the bill allows for a $3 million fund or something for somebody to run for governor. In Iowa, we have our primaries in June. If you look at just like pragmatically how this would work, that means you have $15,000 a week to spend from June to November to run for governor. I don't know what you spent on television, Doug, when you ran, but you know today it costs about $250,000 a week to be on television statewide. You get $15,000 under this bill. I mean, it's just no one's gonna opt in under that circumstance.
Not only that, you could never defeat an incumbent, and that, as a result, I don't see any reason why the Democrats would want to support some legislation like that.
Megan Tooker.
I'm curious what Doug thinks the chances of the independent expenditure bill passing
in the legislature this session.
Right.
I mean, the disclosure requirements, is that what you're referring to, Megan?
Right.
I mean,
more transparency and the independent expenditure.
That might have a better chance, but I still think it's doubtful.
So in 2014, is it just going to be reminiscent of 2012 then as to what we see playing out in the governor and the Senate seat? And
well, you know, I can speak to the Senate seat more than the governor's race, but I can tell you just working with Congressman Braley as he's preparing for this Senate race, I mean, I would imagine that between the parties, the national parties, and the outside groups, that they'll spend two-thirds of the funds in the Senate race in 2014, and the candidates will spend about a third.
What about the – yeah, go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I think that's true, particularly for the Senate, because it's a nationalized race, much less true for the governor's race that will largely, I think, be controlled by the candidates themselves.
What about the disclosure bill? Any chance of that in the House?
Again, I don't want to be I'm not the gatekeeper for legislation, but again, I just highly doubt that they're going to adopt any new legislation regulating campaigns this year.
So really, at the end of the day, we're going to see a similar election just keep playing out.
I think you'll see similar financing, and the reason why you don't see a lot of independent expenditures in the governor's race is because you don't have limits. In the Senate race, you do, and that's why you have more reliance as well on outside money.
We've been talking about legislation that would reform campaign finance in Iowa. Megan Tooker, director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Doug Gross, former chief of staff to Governor Branstad and worked on campaigns for President George W. Bush and Governor Mitt Romney. Doug, thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks, Clay.
And Jeff Link, political strategist and president of Link Strategies. Thanks to you as well.
Great. Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.